Blessing and peace on you, my podcast listeners. I call you guys blessed, blessed, blessed. Welcome, 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 guys. I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you so much for letting people know about this, man, and for tuning in. You know, lately I've just been doing interviews and those kinds of things, but today I'm actually talking to you. And I have in the studio here with me today my partner in life, my best friend in the whole wide world, and she is one of my pastoral team. She is the mama of my children, and her name is Leanna Brewer. Hello, Leanna.
Hello, 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 everybody.
How are you doing, man?
I am doing amazing.
You know, we're sitting upstairs here at Third Stage Ranch, and Ben is recording us. Ben comes in on Mondays and
he records us.
We have a little radio studio up here.
He's a good boy.
He is a good boy. He's not much to look at, but he's
You're
a good boy.
You're just mad because he's a mama's boy.
He is a mama's boy.
Yes,
bad.
Just the way I like.
Yeah, right on. So I haven't talked to everybody just from the heart about what's happened since the coronavirus, and I thought I might do that today, and just what all we're doing now that we're starting to reopen church and what that looks like and how our world has looked different over the past 8 to 10 weeks. And one of the big things that's really triggered us in a huge way is this is the first time that we've been home or not out of the nation in a 10-week period in over 20 years.
It's been crazy. And I didn't realize how, You know, my mama would always tell me when I was a kid that I was the most goingest kid she's ever met. Yep. And it would drive her crazy. But man, at first it was okay, but I am so ready to go somewhere.
Yeah, I'm ready to go somewhere too.
Yeah.
I'm jonesing.
It's hard. My body is like,
how come we're not in an airport right now?
I know. I need to be flying somewhere and doing something. And we are doing stuff and doing more than we've ever done. And even around the world, you know, I'm contacted daily by my partners that we partner with. And we're helping in ways that we've not been able to help before. And we're taking care of more kids and doing more things than what we've ever done. We're just not physically there.
I think I'd like to really talk about our partnership, okay? The partnership of you and I, how we live together through the midst of working together, and our partnership between Spark Worldwide, which is your organization, and Troy Brewer Ministries and Open Door Church, Troy Brewer Ministries, which is my organization, and Open Door Church, which is our organization, right? So
Trinity.
And how all that interacts together and how it all works. You know, I've been sitting on the back porch today trying to map out a ton of stuff because I'm doing my staff meeting tomorrow, and just map out a lot of stuff of just how all these teams work together. And I think it'd be beneficial to a lot of people to know how we work together and how we see all this stuff working together. So you want to do that with me?
Sure.
Okay, right on. So when you and I first started in ministry, we actually started the food bank before we started Open Door Church. And we had the food bank for about 5 years in various forms. It wasn't officially a food bank yet, but we started the food bank around 1990. Is when we really started feeding people in a tremendous way. You and I got married in 89.
We did.
And then, I think I was four in 1989. Yeah, how are you?
You know, you were like five. I wasn't born yet.
Yeah, exactly. So we were in our early 20s.
We were.
Back in 1989. Mm-hmm. And we got married in 19. And at that time, I was a full-time musician.
Right.
And had been a full-time musician for about 4 years. And had been doing that. And then I fell in love with feeding people.
Yep.
I fell in love with feeding people and fell in love with outreaches. And it became my favorite gigs to play instead of playing in churches. As a matter of fact, I remember one day I told you, if I ever step foot in church again, it'll be burning
down.
Oh,
Lord. Thank you.
That?
Yes, yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah. Be careful what you say because you'll end up being
I also said I would never marry a preacher. Yeah.
Yeah, I said, I remember I told you, Leanna, if I ever step foot in church again, it'll be to burn it down. I have no use for those people. And I mean, we loved Jesus. I was a
Absolutely.
Jesus freak.
Yes.
And just the control and all that mess, you know, that goes with all that. But you better be real careful because you'll end up being in church every single day of the week for the rest of your life and be the senior pastor of a mega church. And so But nonetheless, you put up with me all that. I do remember, wait, before I continue on all that, I remember you told me one day, you said, get up. I want you to come. The Lord told me to tell you that you need to come to church today. And I said, no, you don't do that. Remember, we already agreed that, look, we're all Jesus freaks and we love the Lord. I am a man of prayer. I'm a man who loves Jesus, but I'm mad at church right now. And I was mad over very immature reasons. And I was also mad over some good reasons. And a lot of churches owed me a whole lot of money because they wouldn't pay us. They told me they would pay us to do gigs and they just wouldn't pay us. I'd never experienced, you don't experience that in bars. If you go to a bar to play, if they say they're going to pay you $400,
but God has redeemed that for you.
They pay you $400. Yes. That, and he has redeemed that.
He has.
I'm just telling you, I was immature and I didn't know how to deal with a lot of things that are difficult to deal with. And so you told me, let's go to church. Let's go. And I told you, no. And you said, you're not going to tell me no. You never tell me no. I said, I am today. I'm not going to go to church. And then you went to church and Arthur Blessett showed up there.
Oh, yes, he
and
did.
And Arthur Blessett was like my
hero. He was your superhero. Mm-hmm.
I loved Arthur Blessett. And he just happened to show up at that church.
He did. He did.
And the Lord told me, you're missing so many things. Mm-hmm. I'm preparing so many things to meet you in certain places. And if you won't meet me in those places, that's on you.
Yep.
And to this day, I've never met Arthur Blessett.
Well, I did, and he was lovely.
It was a huge, I told you so, whenever you came home.
Oh.
And I was like, what? You got to be kidding me. But we began the food bank, or what would turn into the food bank. And then in 95, it just kind of made sense for us to do church. The Lord had been talking to me about it. He told me he wanted me to start it. And I honestly was not interested in doing a church. I just wanted to do an official ministry that was like a Freedom House where people could come in, hear the word preached, and leave there and be activated. And of course, that's what church is supposed to do.
It is, yes.
And so I thought, well, we're going to get together, we're going to do this, and then I'm going to start it. I'll lead praise and worship. You volunteered to watch all the kids because that's what you do.
I was the singer.
Oh, no.
In children's church.
Yeah. No, you were not. Even in children's church, I think babies start crying, you know,
no,
like, what's going on?
No, they
okay,
don't.
I'm sorry. So we all get together and we had that first meeting and there was just a handful of people there and we were super excited. I called it Open Door Church.
Yes.
Because I looked in the book of Revelation, I looked at the seven churches. When the Church of Philadelphia was the church that I thought we wanted to be like, the Church of Brotherly Love, the church that it was obvious that we love people. And it's there that he says, I've set before you an open door that no man can shut. So I thought I'll just call it Open Door. But I didn't even want to call it church. Do you remember that?
Oh, I do.
Yeah,
I do. And you didn't want to be called pastor.
No, I sure didn't. For years and years and years. Didn't want to take up offerings.
We didn't take up offerings.
No offerings. No, none of that.
Boy, our rebellion got us into some really great places.
God, I'm so sorry. I'm just telling you. So the first year of Open Door Church, and it was our only income.
Right.
The first year of Open Door Church, do you remember what the annual income of Open Door Church was the first year?
I do. It was
$7,000. $7,000. That was not our income.
No.
That was how much money came in to Open
Well,
Door.
Well, I worked at the daycare. I had to go to work at my mom's daycare because we did have children and we had to eat. So,
and I was selling barbecue.
You were selling barbecue at Sam's.
I was selling barbecue and I was also still playing in a band.
Right.
So I had gigs like that. But we didn't have a lot of money. We lived in a house that did not have windows, did not have glass in the windows.
You know what? I look back on those times and I'm grateful for them because
you're so
it helps us whenever we travel around the world that we can honestly, and a big part of us traveling around the world isn't just so that we can say we travel. It's to go and to see our friends, to see how people really live, to really get involved and to see those things. But we experienced them so we really and truly know when people don't have running water, what that's like, people don't have electricity, we know what it's like. We do know what it's like when they don't have food to feed their children.
Yep.
We know those things. And, you know, I was watching on TV the other day and all of these big movie stars and things saying, you know, you don't need to go back to work for the next 6 months. We just need to lock everybody down and
knuckleheads.
Let all of this stuff. And the reason why they say that is because they live in la-la land, for
That's
real.
Right.
They have no concept of what
That's
it means
right.
for
totally
people
clueless.
To really struggle and not have, because they have and have always had, and they don't put themselves in that place mm-hmm. of being able to go and see how those people really around the world have to live on a day-to-day basis. And just saying, you know what, I'm just going to shut. Well, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. These people have to be able to live. They have to be able to get food. They have to be able to get water. And we know that because we experienced it.
Yep.
So I'm grateful for those experiences.
Yeah. And by the way, and thank you, we don't need a Hollywood global socialist knucklehead telling us that we don't have the right to do anything.
Exactly.
Because it's just not safe for everybody else.
Yeah.
Oh, give me a break.
That is...
Yeah, I want to tell you, I've got no use for that whatsoever. Zero use for that.
No, I don't
With
either.
That said, man, I mean, we do know what it's like to not have electricity on in our house, and not just for a night or two, but for extended long periods of time, and to have babies in a house without any electricity.
Sure.
We know what it's like to have... To have lots of people around us that could have helped us that don't help us. We know what it's like to experience that kind of rejection, and kind of the attitude of a lot of people was that, well, it's just proof that you're not called, right?
Right.
It's proof that you need to go get a different kind of career and you don't need to do the church thing. And we pressed through all that. I want to tell you, I would not have been able to do that had you not been the person that you were, and you have such a good attitude about it.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't be where I am if you weren't a person that had a vision to go somewhere else either. And we didn't have, there was people that could have helped us that didn't, but there were people that did help us. They didn't have a lot to help us, but they encouraged us in our walk. They stood with us in our walk. They didn't shame us in it. And, you know, you've always been one of the hardest workers I have ever been around. No one could accuse you of being lazy, that's for sure. It's not that you don't work, because you work way more than everybody else and harder than everybody else. And you're very, very selfless. You know, do you get agitated and aggravated? Of course you do, because you're
a
boy.
I'm a boy.
And that's all right. I like boys.
Thank you.
Just letting you know, I like boys.
Yay.
But you've always been a hard worker. But what's been the greatest asset to me in you is that you hear God speak and you just go for it. And the Lord loves that about you, and I love that about you. And that's a quality that King David had, is he didn't wait for someone else to show him how to do it. He just heard God speak, and he just did it. He believed him and just went for it. And you do that, and it, you know, there's years that we went through that we probably could have done it better or smarter or whatever.
I guarantee it.
But we wouldn't have the treasures that we have. I don't really, honestly and truly don't have one regret of how we did things. And I don't look back and go, man, I wish we would have done that. I don't. My kids are incredible kids. They're great missionaries. They're some of the most generous people that there are. They're good people. They're all very successful. They're not poor like mm-hmm. what we were.
Yep.
And but they're very successful people, and they're good people. And now their kids are the same way. And
yep.
it's all because that's what they learned. And all of my kids are very hard workers, just like you are. And so I really have no regrets. I'm grateful for the life that we've had. But what you first started off with is you wanted to do the distinction between the church and Troy Brewer Ministries and Spark. And just to give a little bit of clarity on that, Open Door is the church. It's the mothership. It's our marriage. It's the main part. It's the house of what we do, and it is the main storehouse of all that we do. And then Spark is the ministry that God gave me over 20 years ago, and it was just specifically for orphans, widows, and children.
Yep.
It's just a children's ministry.
I think that the four different categories of Spark, I was trying to map it all out today, it's orphans, it's widows, it's water wells and missions. Everything
yes.
that falls in that category. And so anything anybody sees at Open Door Church that involves orphans, widows, water wells, or missions is actually Spark, which is actually your organization
yes.
within Open Door Church.
It is.
And so that's actually your organization, and you are the one that's responsible for all of that.
Right. And that entails, you know, building schools, medical clinics. Yep. It entails feeding children all around the world. Yep. And here locally. Yeah, we here. Take care of local kids. Yep. And that's part of what Spark does inside of the church is we help single parents. We help in things like that. So anything that has to do with kids in general is what Spark does.
And then Troy Burr Ministries, is anything media, right?
Yes.
Is anything that has to do with saving girls out of sexual trafficking?
Yes.
Like, okay, like there's a lot of people that, and a lot of orphans that I support, but I don't actually do it through Troy Burr Ministries. I just write a check from Troy Burr Ministries to Spark Worldwide, and you guys do that. So
right.
We keep all that separate. We keep all that separate, and I love that. I actually...
Because some of these kids that you're saving out of sex trafficking are children.
That's exactly right.
And we have to continue to be put into orphanages.
That's exactly right. And you're the girl that has the orphanages.
Right.
How many orphanages do you have, Leanna?
We are in 9 different countries.
Yeah. So right on here.
And so, and we have multiple...
Yeah, it depends on how you count an orphanage, right?
We don't do institutional ones.
Right.
We do more of the foster parenting program type thing in villages because we work in villages. There's some countries where we do actually have more of an institutional type because that is their way that their culture is, and that's how they do things. So it's very fluid.
Yep. Yeah, there's not really a cookie cutter approach from culture to culture.
No, we try to maintain the culture of that and bring the kingdom culture
that's
into there.
Right.
We don't
try to Americanize.
We don't, because it doesn't work.
Right. No, it does not work. But the kingdom
the
is
kingdom
applicable
works,
to every culture
which
in the world.
Which means every kid is protected, served, protect, and raised. You know, they get an education, they get food.
Yep.
They get protected.
Yep, that's a big deal.
They
to
get
us.
All of the stuff that they need to be successful and to break the chain of what's going on.
You do a really big work with kids that are albinos.
Do.
It's a unique ministry because you and I have come across albino kids all over the world. And it's like one of the markers that you know you need to stop what you're doing and take care of that kid. Like I know when I find a kid that only has one arm.
Right.
I don't know why that is that God sends me one-arm kids. But I the whole mission trip stops. It's like it's like a supernatural marker for me when God brings me a kid that has one arm.
Right.
You know, and you know about all that.
Yeah.
So, you know, 2 years ago, there was a friend of mine that had been in India. His name's Nick Choate. And I love Nick. He does my sound at Open Door Church. He's an amazing musician, incredible musician.
Yeah, he is.
He's an amazing human being. He's like, dude, I got to rescue this little girl, man. She's in a horrible, horrible, horrible orphanage in India, bad orphanage. And I got to rescue her, man. I was like, well, so what do you, so tell me about her. He goes, well, she just got one arm. And that's all I need to hear.
Right.
And we ended up raising $40,000 for him to be able to adopt that kid.
We sure did.
And I just knew. I was like, I don't need to hear anything else.
Yes.
I know what that is. But you know that concerning albino kids. How did that happen?
I don't know. The Lord just brought me this one little albino boy, and I just instantly knew he belonged to me. He was an outcast. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah. Let's talk about
that. Is kids that are outcasts.
Yeah, you're such an outcast person. You love people that are outcasts. So what kind of terrible things happen to these kids? Because in Africa, the witch doctors literally steal them, put them in cages, and then use their body parts for potions and horrible things.
They mutilate them. They murder them. They do. It's just demonic. So these people have to stay in hiding. They're not treated as human beings. It's just horrible. It is a horrible thing. On top of the physical ailments that they have, you know, because they live in the sun, and that's hard on their hard on their bodies. Their immune systems are messed up. You know, they tend to go blind. They have all of these physical things that go on, and then you're hunted down.
Yes. And made fun of.
And just, ostracized.
Just don't want any contact with any other human being.
And there is nothing wrong with them.
Nothing.
They are just as human as you and I are. And it's just a
strange thing to me. We came across a little boy named Joel.
Yes.
And this is in Uganda. And we do a huge work in Uganda. And we came across this little boy. And he lived inside of his house. We're talking about a little wooden shack.
Yes. It's probably maybe a 4x5.
Yeah. Just a little bit, kind of like a closet, about the size of a closet. And that little boy never left that place.
No, and he lived in there with his mother, his sister, and his grandmother. And their door is a piece of material, and that's
it. Yeah, they had a piece. They didn't even actually have a door.
Yeah.
And so the little boy couldn't go outside because the kids would beat him up. Everybody thinks he's a curse.
Right.
Beat him up, and people would literally want to abduct him and sell him to somebody for a lot of money, where they would just use all of his body parts and just mutilate him,
and
ultimately murder him.
Yes.
You know, and they, there's all kinds of things where they say, well, if you have AIDS and if you rape a child that has that is an albino, you'll be cured of AIDS.
Right.
And just unbelievable demonic things.
Yes.
Just crazy stuff. So the bottom line is, you found him, you brought him out of that house.
Yes.
And I remember all that. What a big deal that was.
It was huge.
I remember when you brought him into the village, and how many kids are in our school there?
There's 550 kids.
Yeah, so we're in a sea of kids, and they're all our kids.
Right.
And you brought him in, and all the kids immediately were like, oh my gosh, you know? And you stood up, and you hugged him and said, this is my friend.
Yes.
And just the switch that was happening in all those kids, and that little boy never having anybody that's ever stood up for him before. And how old was he then?
He was 10.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
He was 10.
I think he was 10. But that little boy, I mean, for 10 years, he lived in a shack. He had no social skills whatsoever.
And not very far.
No.
I had been in that village for 15 years and never knew he was there. And he was not far from where we do everything.
Yeah.
And I had been up and down those roads and in all of those houses. And never, it just broke my heart that I'd never seen him or I'd heard about him.
Never, nobody
but
ever said anything.
But they kept him so hidden.
They kept him so hidden, exactly right. So they brought him out, and you brought him out, and you brought him in, you brought him out into the broad daylight.
Yeah.
And showed everybody, this is my friend.
And I had to tell my kids there, you know, you will be kind to him. And because they call you Muzungu, which means white people, whether you're white, brown, doesn't matter if you're not Ugandan, you're a Muzungu.
And he's not a Muzungu.
He's not.
He's totally African.
And so they kept calling him that, and he didn't speak any English because he'd been sheltered. And so he just was crying, and he was just ashamed. And I told him, I said, you know, he's not a Muzungu. He's a Ugandan.
Yeah, we told him, dude, you're
And so
you're
I had
totally
to talk
African.
To all of these kids, because I have a relationship with all of those children. I have been gone for so many years, and told him, this is my special friend, and how you treat him is how you treat me. And it was a good kingdom principle to teach them of how you treat other people is how you treat Jesus.
How old is he now?
He is 15. He's 16 years
he's
old
16 now.
He's huge, and he's beautiful.
Huge. Yeah, he's beautiful, and he lives in broad daylight
he
now
does.
With everybody.
And you know what? He is like, he is the president of the class. You know, he's smart as a whip.
Yeah, he's super popular.
But he did get, you know, because he's one of my kids. I've adopted him, and the last time I was there, he was on the dance team, and I was watching him, and I thought, oh, bless his heart. He got my dancing skills.
Oh, did he?
He dances and sings a lot like me, which is just terrible. Bless his heart. But I'm sure he's going to have other good skills.
You actually did something in Tanzania, because we have a ministry that does nothing but finds these kids and blesses these kids.
Right.
And you actually did some, again, because they're so ostracized and people are afraid of them and people want to persecute them. It's a lot like having leprosy.
It is. Okay? It is.
And you actually did a beauty pageant for nothing but albino girls.
Right. So that people would see the beauty in them and see that they're human.
It's
just the craziest thing for people to not think they're human. But
and just go, look at how beautiful they are. And to have those girls
and
walk out on a stage while everybody claps.
Yes.
Everybody claps for how beautiful they are. They've never experienced anything like that before. That's the kingdom. That's us.
Yeah, God is good.
Since we're talking about this, that also brings me just to our leprosy villages. You know, we have all these leprosy villages, and you and I have spent untold number of hours and days in leprosy villages.
You know, when we go to India, it's hard for me. You know, this social distancing has not been a real hard thing for me, because I don't mind the 6 feet.
Yeah, I do.
I don't mind
I
want to
touch everybody.
You know,
I'm
an introvert. So I have become a hugger in our church culture, but I am very much an introvert. So going to India is always challenging to me, because there is no personal space.
No,
there's
personal
none.
Space.
There's
Zero.
None, and it is very overwhelming for me after a while. But when we go into our leprosy colonies, it is just, I am telling you, I think if I could picture the Garden of Eden on Earth now, it's in our leper colonies that they're the most gracious, the most precious people. They're so grateful. They're so thankful, and they're beautiful places. They live in gardens that are just beautiful. And
you know, it's so funny, because on the contrast outside the walls, Everything is filthy.
It's filthy. It's dirty.
It is dog-eat-dog.
It's loud.
It is loud. It's
busy.
Noisy.
It's
horrible.
It's pushing
it's
and
chaotic.
Shoving. And
it's all those things. And then you go through the gates.
Survival of the fittest.
The
yeah.
gates close behind you. And there's flowers everywhere. Yes. There's beautiful trees. Everything is clean, clean,
and they're
clean.
So happy and they got, joyful. Yeah. And are they missing body parts? Absolutely,
yes, they are.
Are they, you know, handicapped in every
yes,
way you can?
They
absolutely.
Are.
But they are the happiest, most joyful people. And you know, you go in there and you just can't help but hug them. You just can't help but love them.
They are so shocked when you show up. And as all, and they, you ring the bell and everybody starts showing up for church.
Yeah.
And as they come in, when you hug them, they just bawl.
Yeah.
They just literally cry and cry. Like, who are you and why are you hugging me?
I remember the first time we went in and we did that. I was with my friend Renee and it was our first time to India. And
Renee Cooper.
Yes. Love my sister Renee. And we went in and we did that. And the people that were hosting us, very good friends of ours. And of course, they live there. They know what it's all about. And we went in and we were hugging people and they were just the shock that was on their face of our hosts. And we're like, you do know these people have leprosy.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I do know that. I'm very aware of that. But I know that if Jesus was here, he'd be hugging them.
Yeah, well, it's how you
and he would
them
be loving
Jesus,
them.
As you touch them.
And so I said, you know, and of course they personally do that, but they know, you know, what they're getting into. And so they were a little concerned that we didn't know. And I said, no, I absolutely
know. Now, just for the sake of everybody knowing this, there's four different kinds of leprosy, and three of them are completely curable.
Right.
And a lot of the people that live in our leprosy villages are actually cured, but
right.
they've already gone blind, or their fingers have
they've
already fallen off,
parts.
Or they've
yeah.
lost their nose or
right.
something, and they can never go into society
right.
again because the Hindus will outright kill them.
Yes, they will.
They will outright
yes.
kill them. You know, everybody thinks the Hindu people are sweet people. No, Indian people are sweet people.
The Indian
the
people are very
are
sweet
mean
people.
As the devil.
They
man.
Are very
and I don't care
aggressive.
Who that makes mad.
Yeah.
I mean, all of our friends that have been murdered in India, they were not murdered by Muslims. They were murdered by radical Hindus.
Yeah, and that's very true.
And so because they believe in the caste system, they believe that if you have leprosy, not only is it okay to kill you, but they will get a better life in the next life if
right.
they kill a leper or persecute a leper or something like that. And a lot of these people are kids. And besides that, not just the person that has leprosy. Let's say the mama gets leprosy. Well,
right.
then the daddy and the kids have to move in with them and they all have to go to the leprosy village. And so we've maintained that for more than 20 years, right? We have 13
yeah.
different leprosy villages. 600 to 800 people in there. Like, well, I thought leprosy was done. Nope. Right here in the United States,
yeah.
more than 24,000 people a year get leprosy, but we don't call it leprosy. We call it Hansen's disease.
Right.
So three of the four kinds of leprosy are completely curable. The fourth one is not curable, and it's a scary one.
It is scary, and a lot of our friends do have it,
it's
and we're
scary.
Aware of it.
Yeah, it's scary. I hate it because what happens is you end up losing all of your feeling.
Right.
And then you end up losing your sight. Then you end up losing your hearing.
Yeah.
And you have no idea if you're in a room with 1,000 people or if you're completely by
yeah.
yourself. It is unbelievable. It
yeah.
is unbelievable. And so, no, man, if the body of Christ is not going to reach out to those people, you know, who are.
Right.
Friends, you've been listening to me and my wife. This is Leanna Brewer. And we've been talking just a little bit about our partnership, of how we live off together and some of the ministry that we do together. She's such a good girl. Man, I encourage you guys to look up her ministry at sparkworldwide.org. You can always look up everything Open Door Church, opendoorexperience.com. You can look up everything Troy Brewer Ministries at troybrewer.com. And you know what, man? Leanne, I just want to tell you in front of everybody, I'm proud of you and I love you. And
well,
I'm looking forward
you.
To see what God does in the next
I'm proud of you too.
The next 10 years is going to be crazy.
It's going to be good.
It is going to be good.
It's going to be good.
Hey, everybody that's listening on the podcast and for everybody that's listening on the radio right now, man, call you guys blessed. Thanks so much for keeping up with us, man. Stay encouraged. Keep pressing through. Have a kingdom eye to see everything, right? Give your
yes.
heart to King Jesus and live that kind of life. And until the next time, guys, I call y'all the head and not the tail, above
and
not
beneath,
and highly favored
of the Lord.
Bye-bye,
bless you, bless you, bless you.